Somebody's just walking down the street, and somebody asks them a question. What are you doing? Who are you? Why are you doing this? That someone is our guest today. Welcome to St. Louis in Tune. Thank you for joining us for fresh perspectives on issues and events with experts, community leaders, and everyday people who are driving change and making an impact that shapes our society and world. I'm your co-host Mark Langston, along with Arnold Stricker. Hey, no, I'm Arnold Stricker, along with Mark Langston. I don't know who I am today.
Get your driver's license out of you.
Yeah, who am I? Look in the mirror, dude. I'm Arnold Stricker.
Hi, Arnold. I'm Mark.
Hi, Mark. How are you doing? Hi, Lindy.
Hey, guys.
I like this new intro you got.
Yeah, it's good.
I'm sorry. I love your finish. It's tickling those ivories. Is that what they call it?
Southern gospel.
Oh.
That sounds good.
Put your hands on the radio.
Yeah.
Start dancing a little bit. Interview it a little bit.
I know. Okay.
Sorry. I guess I should say we'll be right back for our next segment. No.
Okay.
So welcome, folks. If I know who I am today, I was reading and I was modulating in my head. I was changing what I had written, and my mouth got ahead of my brain. Mm-hmm. It's from the guests we had in the previous hour.
Yeah, that's true.
We were talking
true.
About geriatric medicine.
Oh,
that would explain a lot of things.
Oh, it explains everything.
Yeah. So our guest today is Lindy Drew, and she's the co-founder and lead storyteller and book co-author of a book that's called Humans of St. Louis. And I'm holding that up for those who are online right now. Humans of St. Louis. And this thing weighs a ton, but it is marvelous. And I want to do a little intro of Lindy because it's very fascinating. She studied at the University of Arizona, and she studied biology with a minor in chemistry, math, and physics. And then she went to the International Center of Photography, where she studied there in a general studies one-year full-time program of photography. And then she went to Latin America and traveled there and shared people's stories with like a documentary photography. She worked for Casa de Sueños in Phoenix, which was a place that helped care for unaccompanied and undocumented minors and reunified them with their families. Then she went to the Brown School at WashU here in St. Louis, got a master's of social work and public health. And during this time, she founded Humans of St. Louis, and she's been working for them for how long now?
This is going to be the 10th year.
Wow.
Going into the 10th year.
Welcome to St. Louis in Tune.
Thank you. It's really good to be here.
You know, how do you go from biochem, math, and physics to social work, public health, with a little photography in between, and then you're doing kind of an amalgamation of it all. Mm.
You know how everyone asks you when you're young, what are you going to be when you grow up? And I thought I was going to be a doctor. And then I took all the classes to try to take the MCAT and go that route. And my last year of school and college, I had all this time to take other classes to become, as they say, more well-rounded. Mm. And you have to graduate to have these things.
Right.
So I took intro to black and white photography, and I took documentary photography and color and history of, and I loved it.
Mm.
I got a camera in my hands. I graduated. And it didn't feel right thinking about maybe being in a hospital or a clinical setting when really what I wanted to do was explore the world and get to know people and my place in it. Mm. So my third year of undergraduate school, I went to school in Hawaii for a year.
Right.
It was an exchange program.
Right.
And that's where I started to open my eyes that there's so much more out here in the world than what I knew growing up in Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
And that led to the next thing and the next thing.
Okay.
I ended up studying a little bit more about photography, and I made my way to travel around Europe for a bit. And when I finished up, I ended up in New York, applied for a school, did this one-year program, and I really wanted to photograph somewhere I'd never been before and learn more about other culture. So I took off to South America, and I ended up working with kids, and they just took me in. They helped me learn their language. They helped me learn what it was like to understand more about youth development. And after 3 years in South and Central America, I came back home at the time to Phoenix, and I ended up working at this place called the Dream Home. Casa de Sueños. And Casa de Sueños was taking care of kids who had crossed the border undocumented and without their parents. Mm. So we take care of these kids, 10 kids to a home at a time. We get to know them, and if they wanted to assimilate and learn English and go to church and all those things, we facilitated it. And when the social workers gave us permission to reunify them with their family, because a lot of them lived here, we would get on a plane. We'd drop that kid off with mom or dad, brother, sister. And then that would leave another bed in the house opened up. So we'd get another kid. And we just, I just got to learn all of this stuff about where they're from. Guatemala, Mexico, El Salvador, Honduras. They were from all the countries I didn't go to when I traveled in Central and South America.
Okay.
And after about 2 years, I thought, what do I do with all of this? And I had a lot of friends who had been volunteering in Chile with me that ended up in St. Louis. And they were in school at Wash U for social work, for their JD program. And I started to look into that as an option. And I felt really constrained by, there's nothing else I can do to help this population. I better learn more about the system of social work. And Wash U was gracious to invite me into the program. And the public health part came from studying biology earlier on. I meshed it together, but it was more social.
Okay.
And with a bigger population. And that felt like the right fit. So a friend in school ahead of me, she knew someone who wanted to start Humans of St. Louis. And I got together with her. And we launched it together, not knowing exactly how it was going to work out. It was really awkward the first couple of days that we hit the streets. And then that friend took off to a different state, and I kept the project going and started to bring in other friends. And then it just grew. So now for the past 10 years, that's what I've been doing full time.
I love the name Humans of St. Louis. How do you come up with a name like that? Is there any backstory on that?
We're modeled after Humans of New York, who actually started the movement.
Okay.
All and right. He's got 20 million people deep following on his Facebook page.
Wow.
Wrote him, and we asked, do you mind if we open up this site? We didn't hear anything back, so we thought, man, there's Humans of Dublin, Humans of Amsterdam, Humans of Ghana. Mm-hmm. Let's do Humans of St. Louis.
Why not?
And we just decided to hit the streets and start asking questions to get to know neighbors and strangers. And that's what we did. So I think the word is mnemonic for his name is Honey, Humans of New York, H-O-N-Y.
Oh.
So we started using hostel for ours. Oh, so cool. Humans of St. Louis, we refer to it as hostel. And when I go out to interview, we refer to it as hosteling.
Okay.
So, who did you hostel today? How was hosteling this week?
I love it.
Yeah.
Had you taken pictures as a teenager?
I never took pictures until I got to college. My mom's an artist. She's a painter.
Okay.
So I'd always see her painting signs. Signage and lettering was her thing. She can paint anything. But I grew up with that in the house. And she always encouraged me to explore this artistic side. Mm-hmm. And I always thought what she did was so difficult because she starts with this blank canvas. Mm-hmm. She sands the wood. She paints it and primes it, all that stuff. I'm like, how do you get your lettering so straight? But what I love about using the camera is it's this tool where there's something in front of you, and then you can compose it, and you can work with your subject to really bring the expression and, you know, everything out of them. Mm-hmm. And I realized I hadn't had exposure to that, like, literally, figuratively.
No pun intended.
No pun intended. But it felt right using a camera. Mm-hmm. My mom gave me my first camera, which was hers from a long time ago.
So it had film.
It had film.
You had to go get it developed.
Exactly.
At Walgreens.
Exactly.
Okay.
I took it with me on that backpacking trip to Europe after school.
Really?
And I lost it.
Oh, oh, bad news.
But for a while, I would take pictures and I would send the film home to my mom to keep in a bag. And then eventually, when I got home, get it exposed. And by the time I started photography school, digital was just starting. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a big deal yet. Mm-hmm. I graduated that program in 2003. Mm. So nobody was using it quite yet. And then I had to morph over to using it. And I loved that I could take my whole digital darkroom with me when I traveled abroad south of the border.
Right.
So I just had my camera, my computer, and I could get in touch with editors back home and say, hey, I'm traveling down here. Are you looking for imagery? Can I do a story about anything? And I was doing work for Photers, and they were able to publish it. And it allowed me to stay down there a little bit longer.
Wow. Yeah.
So I was able to make this portfolio that I wanted to. And all the while, I was getting so much exposure culturally to people and things I had never known or grown up with. And that really started to lead me to the next thing.
It seems like you're the perfect person to do this because you've got this background. You know, your mom's an artist. Yeah. You communicated down in Central America and South America. You helped kids out in Phoenix area. And then you have this social work, public health background. Mm-hmm. So you take all that and explain to listeners exactly how this process works when you go out and hostile somebody.
Yeah. So typically I'll go out with my bike or just on foot. I'll have my camera. And if people look like they're available to have a conversation, then I'll approach them. I'll usually make the first gesture. It might start with a smile and then walking over to explain what it is that I do. But really, the question out of the gate is, hi, my name's Lindy. Would you mind if I interviewed you and photographed for a project I'm doing? What's the project? Let me explain it to you. It's online. You can see it here. Basically, we'll have a conversation between anywhere from 5 minutes to however long it lasts. If you have a story that is particular to you that you'd like to share already, that's great. I'm all ears. Or I can ask you a few questions and we can see what jogs your memory. So what I try to tell them is it's the process of being one-on-one with someone. And if I didn't approach you to ask you these questions and really listen, you might not have sent me the same thing written in an email to really capture the details of that story, just our interview right now. And it always amazes me in St. Louis, in a place where people have told me since before I got here, don't go to that side of town. Don't cross the river. Don't talk to those people, whatever that means.
Those people.
I'm like, I'm those people. I'll talk to anyone.
Oh, I love those people, though. Okay. Mm-hmm.
That people continuously say, I'm down for your interview. I don't know what you do. I don't know what your site is.
Well, let's figure it out.
But I'd love to talk to you. Oh, and by the way, what are you doing in my neighborhood?
Because I'm one of those people.
Oh, my God.
Because just like folks look others up and down, they're wondering, who's this white chick with the camera?
Absolutely.
And it's true. So, it's, you know what? Yeah. Let's have a moment. But after 15 minutes, after an hour,
everything's normal. Isn't it? Is it normal? It is. It gets normal, doesn't it?
And you hit the nail on the head. That's what it's about.
Yeah. The responses you've gotten that are in the book are just incredible. You know, they're extremely honest, and some are extremely insightful, especially from people who have been here a long time. Mark and I are both St. Louis natives, and we know the good, the bad, and the ugly. And there's that adage that everybody who is born and raised here has negative things to say, and people who come from out of state here really like it, and why aren't you more up on the city and things like that? I think you've really done, which is echoed in the book a little bit, but people are like, there's a lot of great things here in St. Louis, and we know that because we interview people and talk to people about stuff like
that. We like St. Louis.
Yeah, we do.
I can tell. No one's going to be 6 years into a podcast unless they love St. Louis, right? I totally hear what you're saying. Some people have told me because I'm transplant, I bring something different to this idea of even starting something like this. I was traveling around Chile and Argentina, and I lived in Ecuador for 6 months teaching English, and then I was in Costa Rica for another 6 months working at a newspaper as an intern. And all these experiences and hearing the stories of the kids who cross the border at Casa de Sueños, it keeps you curious. It keeps you open. And I always try to drive the questions and the interest with curiosity. What do I know about, what do I not know about you because you've lived a completely different life than me? You look completely different. Your upbringing's completely different. Who you socialize with is different. And that's the social work part of things. And when it comes to the storytelling, I'm always open to listen to what someone decides to say when they answer the questions I throw out there. I also am always looking for something that's solutions-oriented and something that is positive to wrap things up with. But I really appreciate when they go deep and tell me, like, the most darkest, devastating, vulnerable times so that we can talk about it, but also realize, like, you and I are right here on the street or on a stoop. How are you feeling today? Like, how'd you get there? So sometimes I meet people and they say, I messed up. I robbed a liquor store one time. Or I killed somebody. Or I'm just out of jail. And in that moment, I'm like, wow, your experience is so different than mine. And how did you get there? What made you make those decisions or get to that moment?
Quite the journey.
And where are you at today? And what can you teach my audience? So it's really a process when I go out and hostel folks because I don't want it to feel like I'm helicoptering in to where they're from and where they're at, and I'm picking and digging and taking. I want it to be this like two-way process where, yes, I'm knocking on your door, but you're going to be a part of making the story, editing the story, choosing what you give a thumbs up to, what goes off to the audience, choosing to be in the book and all of that. So it's mutual. I want your face to be up on our site and you feel proud of it so that you don't ask me 10 seconds later, take it down. I don't want people to say in the comfort of our interview, I felt really comfortable telling you that my husband just left me. But in front of 130,000 followers or more, and sometimes these stories just spread. St. Louis is a small town.
It is.
And people are very particular, obviously, all of us, about what we put out there. I don't know if somebody hostled me if I would put some of my stories out there either. But the act of asking, even, people have shown me that they really appreciate that. Wow, this has been a nice 15 minutes. I didn't know I had to talk about that. I didn't know that was on my mind. But I'm really glad that you asked. And that's usually the response I get at the end.
And don't you feel that maybe people respond because they're getting a really good vibe from you?
I would hope so.
It's not like they're like you're a reporter, and I'm not dissing reporters, but that we got news at 5 or whatever.
I'm kidding.
It's you're out doing a project, and they don't know that, gee, it's going to be on Facebook for 150,000 people, or it might be in a book or things like that. But
yeah, you're totally right. And I've talked to other friends who are reporters, and they're like, what you do is a little bit different. And I consider it social work. I consider it an art project.
I was going to say this. Yeah, I do too. I agree with that too. Yeah. I think it's great you have that background.
Absolutely.
Oh, I bet it does. Mm-hmm. I bet it helps you really get into the weeds with some of the folks.
100%.
And really understand, though, but be sympathetic to what they're saying and understand and listen.
Yeah,
you know, journalism kids, I'm sorry to interrupt, but journalism kids, sometimes they're just after the story, you know. They don't want to know the heart. It's the heart.
Yeah. There's so many ways I could take it right now, but I remember one time, a couple years into protesting in St. Louis. I got here a year before Mike Brown, and so that was also massive education on the streets while I was getting educated in school. And I went out with a friend of mine who's Muslim, and she covers, so she wears a scarf. And we decided, because we're both photographers, I would photograph the march, rally, whatever, and that she would want to participate in the protest. And then we'd swap part way so she could photograph and then I could participate, because it's a really different feeling when you set your camera down. So she was in the protest part, and her and some friends were arm in arm in front of a bus of police officers who had put themselves there just in case anything popped off or whatever. And out of nowhere, two by two, officers on bicycles started to come into the protest. And as they were approaching that set of people, without warning, they pepper sprayed everybody.
What? Oh, sorry.
Which happens.
Right, okay.
It happened, right?
Yeah.
And she found safety with some other people, but her eyes were burning and she was just in it. And she called me. I found out where she was. And we're sitting there together, and we're helping her kind of calm down and get her bearings straight and all of that. And as we're sitting there together, her face is covered in just this white liquid foam, whatever, and also like milk people had given her to, you know, contrast what the pepper spray does. Reporters came up to her from out of town. And, hi, I'm with the AP. Do you mind if I interview you? Okay. And she's, yeah, what do you want to know? Can I take your picture? Like, takes the picture, asks a quick question. And then it's, thank you for your time. Hope you're right. It was so brief. It was so cold. It was so unintimate. And I'm sitting here with the whole time observing that. And she also has done work on her team for storytelling. So at the end of the day, I was like, I am so shocked at that exchange of reporting.
Right.
And it's different for everyone. I get it. When they got to get their content too. But she's very well aware of the type of storytelling that we do. And I asked her, I was like, do you mind if I take your picture? We're both photographers. Just take my picture. Take it now. I don't want to forget. And then I asked her at the end of the day when I dropped her off, can I share a brief story about that? She's, I hope you do, because the way others were asking me is not the story I would want to be shown. And in no less than a few minutes, her face was all over Twitter. She was on the cover of the next Riverfront Times later that week. And it was just like the brown girl that had gotten pepper sprayed. but who is she?
Yeah.
And right. why is she there?
Right.
And what was she fighting for and her voice? So I really think about stories like that and like real life experiences of how do I empower people through the storytelling as well? Mm-hmm. Even in their darkest moments or most confusing times, how do you get that story out of somebody to really round it out and humanize them, which is the thing I try to accentuate in the title of what we do.
What a moment to capture.
Oh, yeah.
And good for you for capturing the moment, you know, instead of just glossing over it and give me a 30-second answer. A sensational answer is what they're looking
for.
Well,
and you're not looking for clicks.
Exactly.
No.
Exactly.
Tell a story.
Yeah. And I'm looking for when we share that story on the page, I consider it only half of our job is really done. When I interview and I edit the photo and I get permission from the subject to put it up, they know when it's going live. They're very well aware of it. Mm-hmm. I love the second part that happens when people jump in the comments and then the audience really starts to weigh in.
Ooh.
Interesting.
That's beautiful. Yes. I think about this educational side of my background, and quantitative research is such a big thing of what's the numbers? What are the stats? Tell us how many people have COVID right now or what are the – and there's also qualitative data.
Right.
And it's really hard to capture. It's really hard to measure. And I know that in school we didn't have enough classes on that topic, but storytelling is so important for marketing PR, for just in general getting to know – a company and who's behind the work that they do. And I think about this body of work as qualitative data because now people can pick it up if they've never been to St. Louis and say, wow, this gives me a lot of information about the city.
Right.
Or people who live here and from here, like you all, can say, I know that person. Or what they're saying, that is true.
Yeah.
Or I don't have the same experience as the person in that story, but this person who's my neighbor is really educating me right now. And I love that angle of it, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sornel Stricker with Mark Langston. We're talking to Lindy Drew. She's the author of Humans of St. Louis, and also humansofstl.org is the website, humansofstl.org. We're going to take a break in a little bit here, but I wanted to mention and prompt you for some questions that I'm going to ask. Is I want you to talk about the Humans of St. Louis group, the not-for-profit, and then how you put the photographs and the stories together, because some of them are brief little snippets. Some are, there's some poetry in here, there's some prose, there's some long stories, and then you have it segmented by different grouping. You've grouped them together. And then why the book and all that, okay, if I remember what those were.
Real light stuff. We'll get into it.
you didn't write that
down. I don't
even
know who I am.
You need to write that down. No, I know. We're in trouble, I'm telling you.
Sounds good.
We're in a lot of trouble.
All right, so we will be right back for our next segment. You're listening to St. Louis in Tune with Arnold Stricker and Mark Langston on the U.S. Radio Network.
In Tune strives to bring you informative, useful, and reflective stories and interviews about current and historic issues and events that involve people, places, and things. Our topics cover a wide range, such as the arts, crime, education, employment, faith, finance, food, health, history, housing, humor, justice, and even sports. And that's just to name a few. While St. Louis in Tune originates from the Gateway City and covers local topics, we connect to what is going on nationally as well. If you enjoy what you hear, please take time and share and subscribe to this show and listen to other previous shows that can be found on our website, stlintune.com. That's stlintune.com. Or on your favorite podcast platform. That's stlintune.com. stlintune.com. And if you've got an idea that you'd like for us to examine a little deeper, let us know by dropping us a note at stlintune@gmail.com. That's stlintune@gmail.com. St. Louis in Tune. Heard Monday through Friday on the usradionetwork.com and many great radio stations around the U.S. And, of course, right here in St. Louis. Our website, again, is stlintune.com. We want to hear from you. stlintune.com.
.com This is Arnold Stricker of St. Louis In Tune on behalf of the Dred Scott Heritage Foundation. In 1857, the Dred Scott decision was a major legal event and catalyst that contributed to the Civil War. The decision declared that Dred Scott could not be free because he was not a citizen. The 14th Amendment, also called the Dred Scott Amendment, granted citizenship to all born or naturalized here in our country and was intended to overturn the U.S. Supreme Court decision on July 9, 1868. The Dred Scott Heritage Foundation is requesting a commemorative stamp to be issued from the U.S. Postal Service to recognize and remember the heritage of this amendment by issuing a stamp with the likeness of the man Dred Scott. But we need your support and the support of thousands of people who would like to see this happen. To achieve this goal, we ask you to download, sign, and share the one-page petition with others. To find the petition, please go to dredscottlives.org and click on the Dred Scott Petition Drive on the right side of the page. On behalf of the Dred Scott Heritage Foundation, this has been Arnold Stricker of St. Louis.
My. That's Arnold on the piano?
That's me getting down there.
Tickle those ivories.
Seriously, no, that's not me, folks. That's Bob Berthasell. I'll acknowledge him at the end of the show.
Okay.
Welcome back to St. Louis In Tune. This is Arnold Stricker with Mark Langston. We have Lindy Drew. She's the author of Humans of St. Louis. She's in studio with us, and humansofstl.org, humansofstl.org. And the reason we're having her on November the 12th at 7 p.m., she's going to be at the St. Louis Jewish Book Festival, St. Louis Jewish Book Festival, jccstl.com, to get more information on that.
Is that at the JCCA?
What we would call the JCCA, and they call it the J now.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, we used to call it the JCCA.
Yeah.
It was the Jewish Community Center Association building.
Okay. Now it's the J.
Okay, yeah. Right. It's my understanding.
Okay.
So before
that's okay. What a place, though.
Oh, yeah. And
what a wonderful
place. We've had many people on for the book festival on, for the film festival on, and it's wonderful to talk to people about, you know, the films they're making or the actors that are there or the books, the authors. On a previous show, we had an author on. She was about geriatrics.
And grown old.
Just unbelievable
way.
Book.
There's a right way to grow old.
Yeah, on honest aging.
Is that it?
And she is like the international person on this stuff.
Yeah, and she likes to be old. Yeah, she said, you all lie about your age all the time. I go, oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
You know I lie about my age.
29 for the 29th time.
I know. We all do. But she's, no, embrace it.
So I want to read a story here.
Sorry.
And we had talked about this before the break, because here's where I want to go after I read some of these things. You have a photograph. You've melded photographs and poetry or people's just short answers or long answers. This is a photograph. It looks like it's taken up by Montgomery Avenue.
Up in Old North.
Old North. Mm-hmm. Remind me, up by Crown Candy up there.
Yeah.
And you have a, looks like a mom and a dad and the daughters in between. And it said, kids, they said, this is what they said. Kids are way smarter and pliable than we give them credit for. She was a preemie, 29 weeks, and now she's valedictorian of her kindergarten. And you ask, what did you do to become valedictorian? And she said, work really hard. And you know, just little snippets like that. Here's another one. These two guys are standing out. This looks like on page.
It's on page, and those two are probably like maybe 12 and 15, 12 and 14.
And this is an area where there are some vacant buildings, and there was some plywood and some artwork that was put up of famous African Americans that were painted on these. And the question was, if you could give a gift to all the kids in the world, what would you give them? Great question. Here were their answers. Knowledge. Some people out here don't know what to do with their lives. They think that people don't care about them, so they just throw their lives away.
Crazy.
They go out in the streets and just do whatever. And then another one. They shoot. They speed. They know there are kids out here, and they don't care. I think St. Louis is a good place. I just wish St. Louis could be a better place. Stop the violence. Build all these vacant houses up. Make them look nice and help the homeless. How did you put all this stuff together?
Wow.
That's a loaded question. First of all, with that second story, I love interviewing youth and asking them what's on your mind.
Mm-hmm.
They're just treasure trove of information. Originally, when my friend and I started Hostel, Humans of St. Louis, we had no idea that it would become a compilation in print. We were just trying to do something outside of school and test our knowledge about the city and get a little bit of information and be creative as artists. That was really the point, to have a fun artistic side you know, let loose.
From school?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now it's your job.
And now it's my job. And so we started the site together maybe like 2013, around October. And then Cinco de Mayo the next year, in 2014, we launched. And we only had 20 stories to launch with. And then we kept feeding it every day.
This was social media?
On social media, yeah. Okay. On Facebook and Instagram.
Okay.
And we'd do 3 or 4 stories a day. But it got to be a lot juggling school. So we dropped down to 1 story a day. And then when Mike Brown was killed in August, we realized that the comments on the stories were different. And I went to Canfield and spent a lot of time in Ferguson on the streets and interviewed and listened. And we shared those stories. And then we realized Humans in St. Louis is a fun project, but we have this awesome platform to take it deeper. And we were primed and ready to do that.
Mm.
So to your question of like, how did you get these interviews, right? We were just in the process of doing it, not knowing what it would lead to ultimately for where we're at today. After so many years of making content, the stories were just getting buried in the feed, but they were still so relevant. They didn't feel outdated.
Right.
So from there, we thought, what would it look like to publish? Because other books had come out in the Humans of Style.
Okay.
And that's when we found out that an organization here does publish certain books, and we could apply to be a part of that, and they'd give us the money to go ahead and build it, and they'd help distribute it and all these things. So we worked with them to negotiate a contract, and we started to put together what the book would look like. And as we worked with their editing team, the edits would come back and forth, and it did not feel right from our point of view what they were taking out of our book.
Mm.
And it didn't feel right how they were rearranging the stories.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt really whitewashed. And a lot of the stories of people of color were like left to the side. And that was like a red flag to say, let's have a conversation about it first. And we did. And the same thing kept happening.
Mm.
So we went back and they said, listen, instead of signing the contract, how about you all make the book that you'd like to make and we'll eventually carry it? And I was like, that sounds great. Harder, but appropriate to put our best foot forward and also do justice to the stories and the people that we've met.
Right.
And that's how we decided if we're going to self-publish, we need the funding to do it. And so the journey started with fundraising and finding a team of creatives that are local so the money could stay here to publish this book. And it was, I swear to God, the hardest journey, I think, of everything I've ever had to do as the executive director of Humans of St. Louis, because we're a nonprofit, and to just do right by the content and the people in it, but also the team. So we held a Kickstarter for 3 weeks in July in 2018, and we met our goal.
Wow.
Which was so great, because we had the support of the community to say, build the book you want. We don't know what it's going to look like. We don't know what's going to be in it, but I want one.
You had this huge following on social media, though, to help.
We did. We did. And luckily, because of those relationships that we built and that trust that we've built and that track record, they were on board.
Yeah.
We found the team of people who said that they have the time and the commitment and the skill. And we brought on designers. We brought on editors. And we brought on people to help out to build the Kickstarter campaign, do some video work for us. And it started to get really harder than we even thought to pull which stories we were going to put in the book. We lost one of our designers, which was tough because that was a lot of work done with the team, but it also felt like the right choice to part ways. We did a little bit more fundraising to bring on 2 amazing designers, Audra Hubble and Becca LaFell Karen, who are both teachers at Sam Fox at Washington University. And working with them was a dream because they had the skill set and they were open to coming onto the team at the point that we were. And they took on every little detail that we were trying, that we were struggling with to make the book happen. So with all these big, beautiful pictures and only so many pages, they had the difficult job of figuring out how many people get a full bleed photo and how do we make the pictures large enough so people can appreciate the photography, because it's so different when you take a picture on your phone or camera, and then you put it online, and people scroll, they see it. It's a different experience to blow it up then. They had to figure out how to negotiate the room for that, and then the room for the quotes. And then the quotes on social media, they just show up in Times New Roman font or whatever the font is. And we put two quote marks on. But they're like, why don't we do pull quotes like a magazine? Go into all the quotes and find out the ones that are really the take-home message. So they figured out ways to blow that up, and they gave Hostel's Voice their own font style. And it really started to come together. With the editing team that we had, Yetunde Ogunfedodo and Elaine Shaw, they worked tirelessly with us to figure out, how do we start the book? What do chapters look like? What if we're not going to name anything in like a table of contents, but things flow seamlessly? What if we don't put a synopsis on the back of our book? Because you look at the cover and, okay, I get what it's about. And then you open it and there's just four color page pictures that make up the chunk of it. People can open it up and figure it out. Who's going to be on our cover? What colors should we use? All these really hard questions. And the team got together and made these decisions. Ultimately, we chose Jerome Harris for our cover. He's got a very distinct look with his glasses and his mustache, and he's all bundled up for the winter. I didn't know who he was when I met him. I had done a story about him on the Delmar Loop, and he's got a great look. You can't not stop and say, can I take your photo? Jerome's, I got time for you. And he goes, I'm a jazz musician. And you could read a story in the book, but in a nutshell, he's, I wanted to be a drummer. And my mom told my dad, I'm going away for work or whatever for a bit. I better not come home and find a drum set here.
That's how
and
it
when
is.
Mom came home, dad got him a drum set. And he's very well respected in the jazz community out here. And years after I had met him and taken this photograph, I called him up and I was like, hey, Jerome, do you remember me? He said, I do. He's, I'm still here, Lindy. And I said, can I put you on the cover of my book? He's, I would be honored. So we had him on the cover, which was just lovely. He called me the other day to ask how I'm doing. He's like, hi, how you doing? Just want to check in.
That was cool.
Very cool. Came to our book launch, signed the covers of many books. So great. He's so proud. He's so proud.
I bet.
And we're proud to have him on there, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then there's also the whole back cover of the book. And so
what?
You got all this real estate.
There's more on the back?
You got all this real estate to be able to add more imagery. So, you know, we did the customary picture of the arch to set the place. But I chose other people from different identities who represented where I took photos in different parts of town. So Jerome's in the Loop. An Asian family I have was over in Clayton. Abby in the middle, she's a white girl who I took in her picture in Central West End. And then there's these four beautiful black children that I took in Old North. And I really wanted that representation, not just in their culture and like their race, but also geographically. And Travis Sheridan's a friend of mine who I had interviewed for a commission project, and he set the tone for the back cover. And the small quote we have that he said that I really think encapsulates what this book is about is, there are people who are curious, and there are people who are just like, I can walk down the street and never have to talk to anybody. I don't want to talk to anybody. I just want to be in my own thoughts. The question is, how do you create curiosity? So
it's deep. Actually, it's actually deep.
It's deep. So there's so much thought that went into this. Even the colors. The designers had this great idea of saying, why don't we just go with red and blue? And I was like, what's the reasoning behind it? They said red could be like Brick City, right? It's very St. Louis. And the blue is like the confluence and all the water that we see. It's also colors that we see in the St. Louis flag. Like, there's so many ties. And the book was almost going to be published the year of the presidential election. And we're like, is this like now political? We had so many questions. But we ended up doing it. It turned out lovely. When you first open it up, we just start with red and blue pages. And they're just photographs that are typical places that you would see around St. Louis, like little markers. And we don't give the audience the pictures of the photo stories until a little bit later, but then we just dive deep right in there.
I like that it's a hardcover. I love the hardcover. Would you say it's like a, what do they call it, a
coffee table book?
A coffee table book, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd say that. That's a special book.
That's really
sweet. It
is.
It's a very special book, yeah.
It is, and it can be, you could pick it up and read it again and read it again.
I like that it's a hard book. Hardback or whatever you call it.
Let me ask you a question. When you read it, did you flip through it or did you read it like in the from starting from the beginning?
I started from the front And then I was like, okay.
I haven't seen it yet. I can't wait.
I'm going to pass with you.
And then I got to the glossy and was like, okay, this is cool. And then I started reading, and I started to go page by page. Mm-hmm. And I was amazed at a lot of the wisdom that came from people who you just casually met.
Casually.
Yeah. And it's not something that you had put this big formal thing together for them. And some of them are funny, and then some of them are serious, and some of them are, the whole neighborhood knows Jack. They don't know who I am, but everybody knows Jack, and Jack's this big, gray, scruffy dog with this guy leaning over it. And it's just, it could be any town, but it's our town.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And how many of us are like Jack, where I have an animal, and I see my neighbors.
Yeah.
We don't really talk. We go to the dog park, and maybe we know each other's dogs.
Yeah.
That happens. But then these deeper conversations do happen among neighbors. And I think it's fascinating that it can even happen among strangers when I approach people. What else we did in the book that was a really beautiful new thing that we never do on the hostile social media site is we do what the designers call pull back the curtain to be able to show additional information about a story.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd share a story about someone, which I'm sure as I start to talk about it, you might remember when you're reading it. But you flip the page, and then there's like an update. There's more to, that's who you're talking about.
That's neat.
Yeah, and we have one in particular about Lewis Greenberg. And Lewis is a gentleman that I met not randomly, but I was giving a presentation at Webster U, and one of the students came up after, and he said, "Do you know about this house it's in the county?" And he said, "It is covered in Holocaust memorial, like memorabilia, and it just sticks out. You can't miss it. It's in the middle of suburbia, but as you're driving down the street, it's just this massive expression of some guy's thoughts about it." And I said, "You know what? Show me on Google Maps where it's at, and I'll head out there one day." So I did. And I got to the cross-section that he mentioned, and I didn't see anything, but I was like, I came all this way. So I drove around the corner, and you couldn't miss it. And there's Jewish stars everywhere, and there's rocks everywhere, and it's painted, and it looks so disheveled, but like it's its own artwork. Every piece of this guy's landscaping house was covered. And I saw a neighbor walk by on his walk, and I was like, "Hi, do you know who lives here?" He's like, "Yeah, Lewis lives there. If you can find the front door, you should knock." And I thought, I came all this way, so let me
Why
do
not?
That. Yeah. The front of his garage had in German saying, I'll probably butcher it because I speak Spanish, not German, but it says, "Arbeit macht frei," which was a sign that was over Auschwitz's concentration camp that was jokingly saying to the Jews, "Work and you will be free when they enter." But of course, we all know that they were killed once they entered, most of them. So I started to walk up to the front door and I couldn't find it. And I looked to the side, and there was a little pathway across, like, the side of the building where a human must be able to fit through. And I walked around, and I saw his back door. And on the back door, there's a big sign that said, "Appointments only."
Oh,
really?
Yeah. I was like, who is this guy? So I knock, and he opens the door, and this elderly gentleman with a mohawk wearing biker shorts ready to go out for a ride.
Oh, boy.
Scratchy voice. He opens the door and he's like, "Who are you? You got a lot of chutzpah knocking on my door."
Really?
I was like,
did he say chutzpah? Really?
Yeah. Dude, yeah. Okay. He pulled out the Yiddish and everything. Okay. And I was like,
he said, "My name's chutzpah."
I was like, okay.
I love it. Okay, go ahead.
And I said, "Hi, Lewis. My name's Lindy. I'm an artist and a photographer. And someone told me about the art that you did in front of your house. And I was curious to know about it." And he's, "Okay, I'd be glad to tell you." He's, "Today I finished a gallon of milk and I stapled it to my wall on the inside of my house."
Love this guy already.
I know.
I love him.
So he's, "Would you like to come inside?" And I saw that he had a friend visiting. And I was like, "Yeah, that would be great. I usually do not go inside people's houses when I'm interviewing. But it felt comfortable. He gave me a great vibe." And and he was so funny because it was during the Me Too movement when it all started to happen. And he's like, "We could go to a Starbucks. I know the whole Me Too movement and stuff. Like, I'm a gentleman." It was so sweet.
Aww.
I was like, "Lewis, I'd love to talk to you."
Yeah.
So I came inside. His friend was visiting him and checking on him to make sure he was okay.
Oh, good.
He gave me a tour of his house. The inside of the house looked exactly like the outside.
Wow.
He didn't have linoleum or carpet or anything else on his floor. He had rocks. He had stepping stones.
Wow.
He had pictures up on the wall of concentration camps and black and white photos. And he's giving me a tour of a little bit of the home. And then we went back outside because that's really where I wanted to photograph. And we must have talked for 45 minutes. And basically, at the end, he was telling me that there's always an ounce of, do you believe the person because they're telling you what they're telling you in the moment? Or is it true? Can you take it as fact? His story is that he was born in Auschwitz, and then he was liberated with the family.
No way.
And that...
Wow.
I think, and that he then was adopted in the United States, and his family was brought here. I tried to look it up, but I couldn't find so much, but some things really did match up.
Wow. That's crazy.
I didn't end up telling that part of the story, but the other parts I did about how he feels about being a Jew. And he was saying, there's only so many of us around the world, and this, to me, is my artwork to say never again. That was what he was trying to tell. And I ended up sharing the story a few days later on Hostel. And he was not in touch with his family. And he ended up... What happened was I ended up getting a private message on the Humans of St. Louis Facebook page from his son, who was a lawyer in Dallas. And he's like... Lewis's story, a friend sent it to me from St. Louis. I knew everything about what you wrote, and it's true. The one thing I didn't know is that my dad has a heart problem and needs surgery. Is that true? Because they haven't talked for so long.
Wow.
I was like, according to your dad, yes. And maybe you should reach out. He's like, I haven't seen him in years. That house is invaluable. If anything happens to him, make sure that like the house is safe and no one destroys it. And here's two pictures of his grandkids. Please show him. I was like, I think, Clayton, you need to call your dad.
Thank you. That's it, Lindsay.
Yeah.
Like, and that's the social work part that's happening behind the scenes, because we share these stories and people are like, some of them are really cute and funny, like the little girl who graduated valedictorian. But others are asking for help and humanity to reach out. And that's one of those instances. So we didn't share that with the audience. But a couple days later, Lewis calls me up on my phone. He's, Lindsay, I don't know what you did, but I heard from my son.
Aww.
What a mitzvah. What a miracle. I'm so proud of what you've put together. Aww. I haven't even seen it yet. Aww. So I wrote his son Clayton when we put the book together, because honestly, we did a good faith effort to get in touch with everybody we wanted to put in the book to ask permission and say, is it okay if we put you in our compilation?
Right.
On the website, we're just putting stuff up like a news source, it's free for everyone to consume. But with the book, we're charging for it.
Right.
And so people signed the release. I'm like, oh my God, is Clayton going to let me use this photo story of his amazing dad and his reaction? And it's so beautiful. And he sent me the model release back, and he sent me a copy when you're done.
Aww.
And when we published the book, I wanted to drop it off at Lewis's house, and he had passed.
Aww.
So he never got to see it. And we also realized, people, they'll write us during the years and say, you did this photo story of this person, or my mom, or my daughter, and they died of this health concern. They were murdered. Oh my gosh. Sometimes we bring the story back and say, in memory of. So there's a page in the back of the book in red where we actually decided to do a remembrance for the people that we've lost along the way that we know about. And Lewis's name is in there, and I see it and, like, always remember him.
Oh, Lewis.
What a great story. And I can really see the benefit of your social work background in just doing that, helping people through. I'm not going to be your go-between, but here's some things you can do.
Yeah, and actually in the beginning, that's a great point, because my partner and I for the project, we were the go-between. We're like, this takes a lot of work. You interview somebody who's unhoused, and all of a sudden the audience is like, where do I swipe the credit card? How can I drop off clothes? Do they need a job? It's a lot to coordinate.
Right.
And we figured, how can we now empower the audience for someone to step up to do that? So we facilitate. I could handle Lewis's son's ask, but we try to facilitate so when someone sees a need, we can empower them to connect them with the subject, and then they can like make magic happen.
Right.
Because they can do more individually than we can do. And
absolutely.
And that's the point of the storytelling too. Like, I'm one person, or the storytellers on my team, individuals having one-on-one conversations for the most part, and then we share it to this massive platform that we built, and people can do so much more when it's like strength in numbers.
So are you still going out and doing this? Are your other storytellers doing this? Are you just taking photographs, or do you have other photographers, or how is that now?
So we have a team of people. Since we are a nonprofit, we have a board of three. We're actually looking for more people who are interested in helping out, whether you're in finance or you're a visionary or you have another skill that you can bring to the team. Amazing. Please reach out. We have the storytelling team, which at its height had about five storytellers, and now we're down to two. So we're actually looking for more people to train and to bring on as well. We have people who volunteer edit, because let's face it, you can't catch every parenthesis and period and all of that, and that has been extremely helpful. Mm. When people read the story and they don't point out in the comments, it's actually your Y-O-U-R and not your Y-O-U apostrophe R-E. That's a good thing. So we try to keep the storytelling real tight. And then we have other volunteers that help out at this point to sell the books or to do whatever we need when they've come forward to help out. So my favorite part of all of this is actually the storytelling. Yeah. And it's really hard to juggle everything. But it always like infuses this energy in me to hit the streets. And I know if I have no content for the day, or even if I'm in like a crappy mood, I can grab my camera and go chat with someone.
Yeah,
I think I had a breakup like, I don't know, 6 years ago. And I was so salty. I'm like, I'm hitting the streets. I went to some park and talked to this lady. She's sit down. We're going to have a conversation. And this lady spoke so much truth. I was like, why am I so down in the dumps? Yeah. Let it go.
Yeah,
it was
no kidding.
So cathartic. Total stranger. She's nice. Girl, you're going to be fine.
Yeah, really.
I loved it. And so there's so much trust in the people, but right. I love the storytelling more than anything. So I continue to do it.
Sounds like it's been good for your soul a little bit, too. It's helped you a lot.
It has.
Grow and...
It has.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really helped me gotten to know St. Louis, a place that I never had on my radar. I was actually born in Detroit, Michigan, so I'm from the Midwest, and I lived there till I was in second grade.
Okay.
But I don't have very many memories, and so coming back to the Midwest, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And St. Louis is looked at as a flyover city, they say, and I can see why. But you open up a book like this, and then all of a sudden, it's like, there's so much to who lives there and what they're experiencing, just like around the U.S., just like anywhere. So it's a very special place.
It's a great book. I started looking through it and I couldn't stop.
Yeah.
So I got to put this aside. We're doing an interview. And it's a snapshot. It's a snapshot that she's taken, and then a snapshot into the snapshot.
Yeah.
And what's going on there. It's really, I love it. It's fascinating.
Yeah. It's like a marriage of photography.
Yeah.
And so some people just do photographs.
Yeah.
And then, or some people just have sayings.
It's great.
And it's a marriage of. Yeah. These photographs of the people that you took and what they said.
I highly recommend Humans of St. Louis.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
Fantastic book. It really is.
Thank you so much.
Well, Lindy, we really appreciate you coming in. And you can see Lindy on November the 12th.
Really?
Yep.
You can see her? Actually see her?
You can see her at the St. Louis Jewish
Book
Festival.
She'll talk to you even?
She'll be expounding more about the book.
Might even take your picture.
You too. This is great.
End up in the book.
JCCSTL.com. JCCSTL.com. You can get more information on the time. That's actually November the 12th at 7 p.m. at the St. Louis Jewish Book Festival. Or go to humansofstl.org, humansofstl.org.
Super. Yeah, I hope you all come out if you have the time. If you're interested in just getting the book, we're at all the major bookstores in and around St. Louis.
Look
at
that.
If there's a store that doesn't have it, let them know, and they can always reach out.
Look at you, yeah.
And you can get it online at the website he mentioned. And if, you know, it's too much to purchase it, we donated a copy to every St. Louis City and Library, so it's in the system. Anyone should be able to access it if they'd like to.
Oh,
and that
cool.
was the point of
nice.
Making it.
That's fun. That's fun.
Well, it's a wonderful book, and we appreciate you coming in and talking about it. It's just been a real pleasure to get to know
another
you.
Is there another book in the pipeline? No.
You're killing me, Smalls.
I knew
so
I was.
So much work.
What are you, crazy? I just got this one out.
Hostile 2.
Hostile Part 2. Give me another, like, I don't know, eight
know.
Years.
We'll see you when you're that elder person that we talked to earlier. Right.
Yeah.
Come on.
Okay, folks.
Wow, that's great. I love it.
It is.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful book. Check it out, folks. It's unbelievable. The People of St. Louis, one photo and story at a time. Mm-hmm. And you can just take your time going through it, and it's something that will
Arnold is not in the book, though. He didn't make the cut.
I'm glad.
Did not make the cut.
I wonder what Arnold would talk about, though.
Oh, my God.
Oh! No holds
barred. I know. I wonder, what would Arnold talk about?
Depends on what the question is.
It depends on what the question is.
And what the mood I'm in at the time.
It's so true. So true.
I know.
Yeah, and I'd just like to say, like, this second book run was graciously sponsored by the Regional Arts Commission.
Oh, nice.
So they were able to cover it, and in exchange, we're going to be doing some master classes to teach people in the arts industry how to photograph and tell stories eventually. We're getting there, so we're working on it. But right now, we're in the process of making sure that the rest of the books that we have get in people's hands, and they're perfect for the holiday season.
Yeah.
Or if you want to give a gift to people who are arriving to St. Louis, or they're on their way out and they're leaving.
Right.
Maybe you're on a board and you want to say thank you for what your board's done and all the time they've put in. Or someone who just graduated. So think about it for a bunch of different things.
Yeah.
It's an encouraging book. That's all for this hour. Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, you can listen to additional shows at stlintune.com. stlintune.com. Consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or your preferred podcast platform. Your feedback helps us reach more listeners and continue to grow. Thanks to Bob Berthesell for our theme music, co-host Mark Langston, and we thank you for being a part of our community of curious minds. St. Louis in Tune is a production of Motif Media Group and the U.S. Radio Network. Remember to keep seeking, keep learning, walk worthy, and let your light shine. For St. Louis in Tune, I'm Arnold Stricker.